Crosspoint and happy Father's Day. I want to wish you a happy Father's Day, whether you are a father or you play the role of a father figure in someone's life, or you're just celebrating the role of someone who's built into your life in that way. Happy Father's Day to you. Well, my name's Kurt Walters. I'm the lead pastor here at Crosspoint, and I'm currently off on a month-long rest and study break, and very excited to have some downtime with my family and to do some things I normally don't get to do with them when I'm in the regular routine of work, and yet also very excited for what's happening on weekends at Crosspoint as well. And so I wanted to take this opportunity today to introduce our speaker this morning. As I thought about the kind of person that could build into us on Father's Day, I couldn't come up with a better individual than Vince Constantine. I met Vince a number of years ago out on a hot July afternoon as he was my son's football coach. In fact, he coached my son for 2 years, but not just on the athletic level, but really built into those kids on many more levels, specifically in just what it means to be a boy that's turning into a man and a person of integrity and a person of character. Vince and Christine have become connected to the Crosspoint community over the last few years, and we have gotten to know them through the involvement with our kids. Julie and I have loved spending some time with them. And, you know, Vince also, in his day job, works in corporate America. He's a manager of a number of salespeople, a regional sales manager, and again, develops them not just as salesmen and women, but really builds into them as individuals. And then, more specifically, as we watch he and Christine raise their kids, we've just been really impressed with the way that they build their kids, not just academically, not just athletically, but really raising them to be kids of integrity and to be kids that honor God with their life. So I'm very excited to have Vince join us here this morning and to teach you, and I hope and my prayer for you this morning is that your heart is open to whatever God wants to say to you through Vince. And as he comes to the platform in just a moment, I hope you'll give him a great Crosspoint welcome. Before he joins you on platform this morning, take a look at this trailer from the movie Jurassic World.
It's not about control.
Stand down. It's a relationship. Based on respect. These animals are thinking, I gotta eat. I gotta hunt. You gotta be able to relate to at least one of those things.
Every time we've unveiled a new attraction, attendance has spiked.
That was awesome.
Corporate felt genetic modification would up the wow factor.
They're dinosaurs, wow enough.
She was designed to be bigger than the T-Rex.
What happened to the sibling?
She ate it. We have an asset out of containment. What is that?
Her tracking implant, she clawed it out.
How would it know to do that?
She remembered where they put it in.
Oh, God.
She's killing for sport.
You got 20,000 people. You got no more boats. You don't have enough guns.
If we do this, we do this my way.
Eyes on target.
Light it up.
Something's wrong. They're communicating.
We're talking about an animal here.
A highly intelligent animal.
Wow. It's an honor to be here this morning on Father's Day and to talk to you on a variety of different levels on this whole concept of control versus respect. You know, on Friday, I got a chance to see, I actually saw the movie on Thursday. By the way, I know we're not supposed to make endorsements. It's awesome. It really is truly awesome. It's great no matter kind of where your background's from, whether you're into dinosaurs, action, the whole bit. It's awesome. So there's my little plug for it. But here's the thing. I got a chance to see the video that Kurt did, and I had to be honest with you, I was completely taken back, and I thought of something that happened to me earlier this week. I was in New York in a leadership training workshop on Tuesday, and there was 25 of us that worked very closely together, and we've known each other for about 17 years that we've all worked together, so we're a really tight-knit group. And the presenter in the afternoon session had this piece about communication, and communication as far as being connected. You know, we communicate in a variety of different ways, right? We communicate via Twitter, email, text, voicemail, you name it, we communicate. But do we really connect? And what does that really mean to connect? So in the afternoon session, and this is a little bit hokey, but we did it. And it was really cool. We had six people that we pulled out of a hat, six people that we work with, and we put them up in front of the room. And we started this statement out by saying 95% of the world's problems would be ended if we would only communicate and connect. So I want you to say something encouraging about this person. Now, keep in mind, this is about leadership. So I all went around the room, and we looked these people in the eye, and we said things of encouragement like professional, mentor, coach, leader. And we started this list that was about 15, 16 items long. And those six people felt invigorated. They felt connected, as well as the other people in the room that were making these comments. You know what was amazing? The amazing part of it was after we got done and the presenter got back up in front of the room, he said, you know what's really weird about this exercise? He said, when's the only time that you say those great things about people where you truly connect? Where's the one time in life that you're guaranteed to hear that? That's your eulogy. And it really hit home with me that we do not spend enough time making those connections, that we don't spend enough time truly in connecting with others. Yeah, we talk a lot. We text a lot, we email, we FaceTime, we do all of these things a lot, but where are we making that connection? So I hope in our time here this morning, we make some connections. They're going to be different. They're going to land in different places for different people, and I understand that, and I know that in being up in this platform. But I'm truly excited to be here this morning. Once again, like Kurt mentioned, my name is Vince Constantine. I do wish you all a happy Father's Day. It's a great day. My kids haven't given me my presents yet, so kids, Let's make sure that we take care of your father today. But I'm truly excited to be up here today. So, you know, a few weeks ago when Kurt came to me and asked me to do this, I thought about my time here at Crosspoint. My wife and I and our family have been attending Crosspoint for the past 3 years. And for 18 years prior to that, we attended a church here in Indianapolis. We loved the church. We loved everything about it. But we realized as our family was getting older that, you know what, we probably needed to get to a place where we could make some connections. So after shopping a variety of churches that my wife did, I'm not a big church shopper, she did all the work, we came to Crosspoint one Sunday, and I remember waking up that Sunday, and this was when we were at Fall Creek Intermediate, and when we got up there, I realized, man, I walked in that door, and I'm not making this up, in 18 minutes, I had made more connections than in 18 years. And I realized at that point, man, I'm home. This is a great place. It's a place where people don't have it all together, and that's awesome because we're going to learn together and we're going to grow together. So when Kurt asked me to do this, I said, absolutely, I'll do this. I will do this. This is my opportunity to pay back to a place that has given me so much back in my own life and in my own faith and my own family. And then it hit me. I was on the road. It was 2 days after I said yes to this, and I woke up out of a dead sleep at 3 a.m., and I thought, what have I done? Right? We all do that, right? We all commit to something and then all of a sudden go, oh man, I'm not prepared for this. I'm not in the right place for this. This isn't how I roll. This is not how I operate. You see, I thought to myself, you know what? I've grown up in the church and I had a great family. My family, church was encouraged. We went to church every Sunday. I learned about the Bible. I studied it. I remember the tough times in my life that I turned to my faith. I also, too, in my professional career, as Kurt mentioned, in corporate America, I do a variety of different training seminars, and I do this on a variety of topics, but the topics are all sales-related and leadership-related. I coach in this community. I have for the last 9 years, so I've gotten to connect with a lot of kids, and I'm a parent. I'm a father. Now, for me, the jury is still out. I have four kids, 14, 12, 10, and 8. The jury's still out for me. I'm into the tough times of my life, so what makes me prepared to do this? What makes me prepared to do this? Because here, this is the confession I have to make. See, I've never put all four of those things together, coach, mentor, teacher, and then the religious aspect of it, the Christianity aspect of it. And I'm not a theologian by any stretch of the imagination. And I don't also profess to have all the answers. But I hope in this time together that we can put some things together to make some connects and kind of really dive into this. So I have a little confession to make about myself. See, the reason I struggle with this is because flat out, I'm a control freak. I am. And I mean that in the kindest, gentlest, nicest way possible. And you know what? I know I'm not the only one. I may be the only one to admit it, but I'm a control freak. And some of you are as well, right? We want to be in control of every situation of life. So I thought, just to kind of give a little context to this, that maybe it would be a little bit helpful for me not to speak about what it means to be a control freak, but for somebody else to do that.
I've been called a control freak. I like to think of myself as more of a control enthusiast.
Perfect 177 degrees.
And that's why this Road Warrior rents from National. I can bypass the counter and go straight to my car. And I don't have to talk to any humans unless I want to. And I don't. And National lets me choose any car on the aisle. Control. And so, what's the word? Sexy.
Go National. Go like a pro.
So another confession to make. See, you're going to see some of the windows into my soul today, right? I'm going to kind of open up here a little bit today, and that might scare some of you. But what's really funny about that is, so the first time that commercial was on, we were sitting there watching a ball game, and my two sons, Dean and Jackson, who are 14 and 12 and have the same sense of humor that I do right now, they both saw that, and they both turned and looked at me and said, "That's you." And they are right, that is me. If you've ever traveled with me, man, I go to the same place in the airport, I go to the same coffee shop, get the same water from the same aisle in the same refrigerator, grab the newspaper the same way from the same, we all want to be in control at some point. So I got a chance to meet with Kurt and say, "Hey, Kurt, you know what, I got to sit down and go through this with you because I'm a little bit of a control freak. I don't know if you know that about me." And we're sitting there and he laughs and he says, "Hey, you know what the series is about that we're in?" I said, "No." He said, "We're at the movies, we're going to talk about Jurassic World." I'm like, "Really?" And I told my girls I was talking about Jurassic World, and my two little girls who are 10 and 8 go, "You can talk about dinosaurs?" I'm like, "Sure, why not? I can talk about dinosaurs. I know nothing about them except for that movie school." But I said to Kurt, "I'm a control freak, so okay, what tie-in is the movie?" He goes, "It's about control versus respect." And I thought to myself, oh my, look at me. And here's the amazing thing about how God works. He meets you right where you are. And that's so appropriate. He meets you right where you are. No matter where you're at in your life, the highs, the lows, if you're sideways, if you're right side up, upside down, he meets you right where you are. And he knows the challenges that you have. You see, here's what's interesting about being a father that I've found, right? And my experience is certainly different than the rest of yours, and I understand that. But when you think about what it truly means to be a father, right? If you think about a model father, what does that look like? Well, a father's defined as a leader, a coach, a mentor, somebody that does what? Has it all together, all under control. And you know what? Control's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not at all. But it is the thing that we struggle with the most when it comes to relationships. See, it's okay to be in control, right? We're in control about how we act. We're in control about what we put into our bodies. We're in control about what we say. But in a relationship, in a true relationship where you're getting connected, it's often difficult. It's difficult to give up that control. So that's a concept that we all struggle with. And as we move into this morning, as we kind of launch off from this point, I want to take a moment and pray for us. Dear Lord, I'm so thankful for the opportunity to be in front of this group today, to be up here teaching. Please be with us today. Thank you for Father's Day. Thank you for fathers all across that model into us what it truly means to be a coach, a mentor, and a leader. And Lord, as we spend time together here this morning, I'd ask that you take our lips and that you would speak through them, that you would take our minds and think through them, and most importantly, God, you take our hearts and set them on fire. Amen. So, the movie, like I said, this is awesome, this Jurassic Park. Now, there's not a whole lot of character development here, so it's mostly about the dinosaurs. But there is one main character, his name is Owen Grady, and I'm telling you, man, he is one bad you-know-what. He's a little bit of a renegade. And he trains, as you see in the trailer, he's got these four raptors that he trains, right? And he's kind of got this little dinosaur whisperer thing about him, right? And what happens is Jurassic World comes to him and says, "Hey, listen, we've created this freakazoid dinosaur But we cannot control it. This thing is completely out of control. And he turns to Claire, the other main character in the movie, and he says, you want to build a relationship? Relationships aren't based upon control. Relationships are based upon respect. And you know, here's the interesting thing, and I started to research and look into this a little bit, and I thought to myself, what does it mean to really be in control versus respect? And one of the things I found out is that control is the opposite of respect. Control is the opposite of respect, right? In a relationship, you can't be in control all the time and then have someone's respect. You can't be putting your thumb down on them and have them respect the whole time. So as I looked at this and I thought, okay, let's define this a little bit. Let's put a little bit more definition around this. So when I look at control, I kind of found this to be very interesting. Control is squashing the opportunity to learn from one's environment. Now, what does that mean? Well, I'm going to give you an example because we've all been there. Either we've done this or we've seen this. Let's say that you're at the third grade science fair at the school across the street. And you walk in and there's all these science exhibits and you see every one of them. And you come up to this table and you see this exhibit that is unbelievable. In this blender, the kid has splitting atoms. And this other part, he's got the theory of relativity defined. He's got rocket ships blowing up and exploding. And you're like, wow, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And then you come over and you look at the placard. And I'm just using a name here, so don't be offended. You look at a name and it says Timmy. You're like, Timmy? That every time I see Timmy, he's either picking his nose. And when he's in line, he's jacking with someone. He comes over to my house. He can't even lift up the seat on the toilet and they'll let him find it. But you know what? I look and I'm like, oh, that's right, Timmy's parents. That's right, they're biochemists at Lilly. No wonder they made this. They did this, not Timmy. And you know why we do that? Because we want to be in control of that moment. We want to be in control of what that kid is, what his image is. We want all his friends to think he's cool, think he's the greatest scientist in the world, to think he's so smart, and for one day to not fail. But is that really building into someone? And so when you look at what it means to have respect, and when we talk about relationships and real relationships, we need to talk about real respect. And I love this, man. I think this is so appropriate. Real respect comes when no one knows where the choice ends up. When no one knows where the choice ends up. I thought that was so appropriate. You see, many times in a relationship, we try to influence the outcome. You can consider control versus just letting it play out. Just letting that whole thing play its way out. So I believe that, you know, our Heavenly Father models this for us. Like I said, I'm not a theologian. I certainly don't have this all together. So as I kind of put this together, I thought, well, how does this get modeled for us by our Heavenly Father on Father's Day? You know, a controlling perspective gives no choices. And God gives us choices. Last week, Jeff talked about Adam and Eve and the choice that they have of eating the fruit of the tree of life. God could have put his thumb down and said, absolutely not. But he gave them a choice. You know what that choice represents? That choice represents free will. What does free will represent? It represents love. You see, because here's how this works. Respect, with respect comes trust. You cannot trust someone that you do not have any respect for in a relationship. With trust comes faith. That trust, being able to see things that you cannot see, believe in things that you can't see, that are often difficult to define. And then with faith comes grace. That ability to not be able to see something and then get something that you didn't deserve is an amazing message. See, because if we live with a controlling God, there would be no respect and there'd be no grace. And if we're truly built in the image of God, he's built that respect into us. And without that grace, without that love, we would get what we deserved. And I'm so thankful that we don't. You know, on Father's Day, and I thought about this yesterday in my preparation time, is that I'm reminded of how God loves us. Right? God so loved the world that he gave his only son, his one and only son, to die for our sins. What an amazing message. What an amazing thing. What an amazing thing. But it starts with respect, and it starts with that choice and that free will. And I'm so thankful for that. You know, Jesus tells a story, these stories in the Bible, he calls them parables. And they're awesome. They're great teaching points. And we're going to certainly talk about one that when you think of today is of the prodigal son, right? It's Father's Day. We call it the prodigal son, but in the Bible, it's called the loving father. And that's what it's oftentimes referred to. And what a great image that this paints for us. You see, Jesus uses these parables because they're different jumping off and launching points. Because as he's speaking to different crowds, right, there's different people that are going to connect with it a different way. You might connect with something one way. You might connect with it another. Over here, this group might connect with it another. You might connect with it two or three times. In fact, you might like this service so much that you'll come back for the 11 o'clock service, the second showing. You never know, right? We're in the movie series. But God tells these stories because they resonate. They keep going. It's the process that keeps on going, and it keeps giving back to us and learning lessons from it. And I love this story, and I think it's so appropriate for Father's Day. So most of you know this story, and certainly as you kind of look at this and you think of this, what does this truly mean as far as respect and control is concerned? And so as we look at this scripture this morning, we're going to start with Luke chapter 15, verses 11 through 24, and we'll start right in the middle of the verse. It says, a man had two sons. The younger son told his father, I want my share of your estate now before you die. So his father agreed to divide his wealth between his sons. A few days later, the younger son packed up all his belongings and moved to a distant land. And there he wasted all his money in wild living. At the time his money ran out, a great famine swept over the land, and he began to starve. He persuaded a local farmer to hire him, and the man sent him into the field to feed the pigs. The young man became so hungry that even the pods he was feeding the pigs looked good to him, but no one gave him anything. When he finally came to his senses, he said to himself, at home, the hired servants have enough food to spare, and here I am dying of hunger. I will go to my father and say, Father, I've sinned against both heaven and you, and I'm no longer worthy of being called your son. Please take me as your hired servant. So he returned home to his father, and while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. Filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to his father, Father, I've sinned against both you and heaven, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. But his father said to the servants, quick, bring the finest robe in the house and put it on him. Get a ringer for his finger and sandals for his feet, and kill the calf we have fattened. We must celebrate with a feast. For this son of mine was dead and is now returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found. So the party began. And how appropriate on Father's Day to talk about that. And you know, as you kind of think about that story, and you think about this control versus respect, I think you have to think about it a little bit of a historical perspective and maybe relate it a little bit to today's world. I see the son is the one that wants control, but it's the father is the one that's giving the son the free choice. There's a pretty good chance that this son is a spoiled brat, right? I mean, this kid is a lunatic, and we don't know how the story began. We don't know some of the background of it. We don't know that if the father was a control freak and he just put his thumb on every single thing that the kid did. We don't know that. But what we do know is this son seriously had no regard for his father. And you can see that in here because in Jewish culture, you didn't get your inheritance until your father died. So he's basically saying, hey, Dad, you know what? Not only am I sick and tired of you, but you're dead to me. I'm out of here. I'm done. I want gone. Now, the father, and let me tell you something. If that happened in my house, it'd be a little different conversation. I promise you that. There is no way that would be going down. But in here, the father realizes something. He realizes, hey, you know what? I can't control this anymore. I got to let this thing go. So he probably, in the back of his mind, knows, dude, I'm going to give this kid all this money, and he's going to blow it. But the father said, you know what? I'm going to relinquish control here. Right? I'm going to let the environment, I'm going to let you learn from your environment. What is real respect? Learning from one's environment, learning from one's choices. So the son goes out and he blows it, man. He blows everything that he's got, frivolously spends on Lord only knows what, and he has nothing left. There's nothing left in the tank. And so what happens in life when you got nothing left in the tank? You fail. You're down on your knees. And I can promise you one thing, man, I failed. I have failed in my own life as a father, as a husband. I have failed in certain aspects of my business, in certain aspects of my life here on this earth. We all have. But I can tell you something. When I've been down on my knees and I've wanted to eat that slop, because I know that that's all that's left, that's when I grow the greatest. That's when I have my greatest gains. And as a parent, that is so hard to imagine your own children going through that, right? We try to control the process and not the outcome because we want the outcome to come that way. We don't want our kids to go through failure. We don't want them to go through those hard times. But you know what? Think about your own life for a minute. Think about when someone gave you that choice to find your own way and how it was. So here's this son. He's at the lowest of the lows, and he realizes, man, I got to go back to my father. I got to go back to his hired servants. You see, he was at the lowest point of his life and realized, you know what? I need to go back and face the music. And what an amazing message to be able to think about having to do that. To pick yourself up and say, you know what, I've screwed up. I got to go back. And I don't need to come back at the highest level. I'll come back in at the ground level. I'll work my way back. And what does the father do? The father sees the son and runs towards him. You got to understand, in Jewish culture, that didn't happen. The father didn't make that type of emotional connection, but in this case, he does. And he runs towards his son, and he hugs his son, and he brings him back into the fold because he knows this. He knows that his son has hit rock bottom. He knew what the outcome was going to be, and he could have controlled it. He could have told his son all these great things, but he respected that there's a process in building this relationship. What an amazing story. And he understands this, that real respect comes when you leave it to choice. The choice and free will equals love. And that's what it's about. That's what it's about being a parent. And that's what it's about in this story. You know, oftentimes I think about parenting and coaching and mentoring and leadership about building into others. And as we do that, one of the stories I'm reminded of in the Bible is the story about the sower and the seed. It's a story in Matthew that talks about, you know, the sower, he can go and throw the seed on fertile ground where it's going to grow and flourish. He can throw it over on the rocks where it's going to burn up and die, or throw it in the weeds where it's going to get choked out. But here's the cool thing. In the verses leading up to it, Matthew 12, verse 33, I think it speaks more to parenting than any other verse in the Bible, at least from what I found, what it truly means to be a parent. And he talks about this in a way that represents what this tree represents. He says, make a tree good and its fruit will be good. Make a tree bad and its fruit will be bad. And its fruit will be bad. I'm sorry. Make a tree good and its fruit will be good. Make a tree bad and its fruit will be bad. For a tree is recognized by its fruit. And I think so often of this image, in this image in this tree. You see, here's how this works. This tree started out as something. I don't know where it started from or who did it, but it started from a seed. And that seed is an idea when we think about it in the context of parenting. We think about it in the context of how we build into others. And that seed got planted somewhere. It got planted in something fertile because it gave it an opportunity to grow. See, when we take the time to plant something in a place where it's going to grow, great things happen, but it's got to start there. Then the next thing that we do is we feed it. We feed it and we water that seed. We spend all time working that seed and we feed it. We feed it with knowledge. We feed it with opportunities. We feed it with all sorts of positive experiences. We also physically feed it with food, but also too spiritually, right? We spend time in mentoring. We spend time in discussing the Bible. We spend time in devotion with our family. We spend time around that kitchen table, really building into one another. And so what does that mean? Right? How does that grow? How is that going to continue to grow it and sustain it? Then the next thing that we have to do is, this tree grows, this thing could go completely out of control. It could completely go in a variety of different ways. We have to prune this tree. I'm reminded of this from my childhood. See, I grew up in upstate New York, and we had this garden. We lived out in the country. We had this great garden, and then in this garden, we had this unbelievable raspberry patch, and I love raspberries. We had them coming out of our ears. We had them in every variety you could have. We had raspberry jam, jelly, tarts, juice, pie, you name it, we had it. And we had an abundance of it, and I loved it. And I remember every fall, after we kind of harvested all the raspberries, every fall we'd go out there, and this thing would be overgrown. It looked awesome. And my mother would get us out there, and she'd be pruning all these branches back. And I'm like, why are we doing that, right? We had this bumper crop. This thing's growing. It's amazing. Why would you do that? My mother said, because you have to prune it back for it to grow stronger. And so we have to do that in our own lives, right? A little tough love, a little discipline, saying no and meaning it. Once again, that's not easy, right? We're watching this beautiful tree grow, and it's cute, and it's cuddly, and it's lovable, and it gives us those puppy dog eyes when it asks us for something. But as we look at it, we realize that sometimes we've got to prune things back a little bit. And then there's a cycle of life, right, that we prepare for it, right? This tree goes through a cycle, right? It grows, it flourishes, it grows these beautiful leaves on it. And then in the fall, the leaves die off, the tree dies down a little bit. And what does it do when it's doing that? And you see, here's how I look at parenting. Our number one job as a parent is not when the tree looks awesome and it's beautiful and it's bearing fruit. It's during those tough times. It's during those tough times that the winter of whatever cycle that it is that we're in. They're going to be tough times. There's going to be our kids don't make. There's going to be parts and plays they don't get. There's going to be colleges they don't get into. There's going to be girlfriends and boyfriends that don't work out. We all know that. But instead of coming over and hovering over the tree and trying to keep it green and everything, we have to prepare it. You see, here's the amazing thing about this tree when it gets planted and it goes through that cycle. You know what its root system's going to do? It's going to go deeper. It's going to grow deeper and try to find those things where it can really pull its way through. And that's truly an amazing piece. Because here's what we hope to gain and go for. When we get the opportunity, when this tree grows and it grows that strong root system, is that when it matures, and for some of us, we hope that's about 18 years, okay, right? Maybe 22, 23, 24 years. When that tree totally matures and it grows and it comes up and it comes out, it's going to be able to weather any storm of life. And if I as a parent can do that and I can leave that image and that impression, then God bless it. But I know I've got to feed it. I've got to plant it. I've got to feed it. I've got to encourage it. I got to prune it back every once in a while. I got to prepare it for those storms of life so that when it grows that root system, it can take on anything in any part of life. That doesn't come from control, folks. That comes from respect, because there are several storms that this tree is going to cycle through. So I'm a huge, for those of you that don't know me, once again, kind of sharing a little bit, I am a huge sports radio fan. In fact, right now, if you turned on the radio and you said, hey, listen to this song, tell me who the artist is, I'd have no idea. Unless it's the Foo Fighters, which, by the way, that was awesome. I love that song, right? That's my favorite, right? Somebody getting the best of you. Think about how appropriate that is for Father's Day. But I think about this, and I listen to this one sports radio talk show that talks about the one big thing. So I got three big things because I couldn't wrap it all together. But I think about this as we kind of move from this place today and we kind of get into a spot where we really can develop into these relationships and build in these relationships and really what that truly means. And you see, here's the deal. I believe this to be true. You can't control the outcome. You can't control the outcome. You have to respect the process. And I think about this in my life, once again, as I shared with you, right? We've all failed. We've been at that time where we have failed, and we're down on our knees, and that's the biggest time where we grow. And I'm so thankful for those opportunities, because it's okay to fail. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to show not only your commitment, but to also show that vulnerability. That's all right. Things are going to work their way out. Things are going to get better. Things are going to continue to grow. But if you sit, and when we sit, I say you, I mean me, right? These sessions, by the way, this is self-therapy for me, because this is what I struggle with. Once again, that window in my life, these are the things I struggle with, this control versus respect in a relationship. But I spend time in prayer, and I think to myself, man, God, show me the way. Show me how to be a better father, husband, leader, mentor, coach. Help me build into that and build into my kids. The next thing I'll share for you is this, respect for the process. The outcomes will take care of themselves. I had this amazing last conversation with my father 23 years ago, right before I moved out here to Indiana. And I will never forget this. My father, since he's passed away 14 years ago. And I remember this like I remember September 11th where I was, like I remember the day I got married, where I remember how the day each one of my four kids was born. I remember this. We're sitting in the kitchen. My father was not a great communicator. This is what makes this even more special. He was horrible at it. And I'll never forget him saying to me, he looked at me as I was getting ready to move out here. I did not know what this world was going to bring to me. And he said to me, he said this. He said, I've gotten you this far. The rest is up to you. And at the time, I was like, oh, okay. Right, I was 23 years old. Okay, that sounds great. But as I left that house and moved out here, I was only going to be out here for 1 year. That was the deal. It was 1 year, and then I was heading back east. But the process, right, the process, respecting the process, the outcomes. My father could have said, hey, you know what, I'm going to move out there with you. I'm going to help you find your first job. I'm going to help you decide who you're going to marry. I'm going to help you buy your first car. I'm going to help you buy your first home. They were there as a support network, but then realized, hey, you know what? I respect you and love you so much, man. You've done this. We've done this. We've come to this point, and this is an awesome place to be. And I remember that because those are powerful words that I hope to be able to build into my own children someday, to be able to say, hey, you know, we've gotten you this far. Now it's your turn. My wife and I have this saying in our house, and we saw this several years ago, and we say this a lot. We say this to each other. We say it tongue-in-cheek to each other every once in a while. And it's a saying that says, prepare the child for the path, not the path for the child. Prepare the child for the path, not the path for the child. It's so easy sometimes to pick up the phone and call that coach and go, hey, why isn't my kid playing more? Why isn't my kid starting? Why is my kid getting the ball? Why is my kid not do this? It's real easy to sit there and say, hey, you know what? Man, we all want to round those corners for our kids. We all want to make the road smooth for our children. But really, what are we preparing them for? What are we preparing them for? Relationships are tough. We have to give up control. And it's difficult for all of us. But if we do that, if we relinquish that control and respect the process, I can promise you that God's going to build into us and into our community in such a powerful way that we won't be able to handle the force of it. So as we move out of here, on the back of your connection card are these next steps. And I want you to take this out. You can look at this. They're up on the screen. And I'm going to ask you to do me a huge favor. I don't want you just to check a box. We check a box so often in life. It drives me insane. We got so many people that just do something just for the sake of doing it. So what I want you to do is when you mark this card, write it down on the doodle pad inside the weekly. Take a picture of it with your cell phone. Put it someplace that you'll refer to it this week so that you can say, God, help me relinquish control in an area of my life where I need to grow. Or identify an area in your life where you can begin to work on respecting the process and not force the outcome. Maybe it's something as simple as discovering an area of your life where you've tried to prepare the path versus just letting it happen. And you know what? There's a lot in this community that we can do, not just here in Fishers, but in other communities here in Indianapolis where we can really help to build into one another. And so as I ask, as we leave this place this morning, as we go out of here, that we do something that, and I do this with every team that I interact with, whether it's on the field, whether it's in a boardroom, a meeting room, in a session like this. And I'll leave you with this. You control, and control is an okay thing because you control two things, your attitude and your effort. And I talk to my teams about starting fast and finishing strong. And that doesn't mean when you start fast, you go at something with reckless abandonment. It doesn't mean that you just go out there and just throw everything and see what sticks up on the wall. You put some real thought into it. You put some real thought into what it really means to get out there and get after it. And then I tell my team, man, we got to finish strong. We have to finish strong. And that means there's going to be roadblocks. There's going to be things that fly at us. And there's going to be all sorts of ways that come at us. But we've got to be able to plow through that. We have a lot of work to do in this community. We all do. We have kids that need us. We have our families, that kitchen table leadership, I call it, that we really need to build into. And I'm reminded of the story of Nehemiah when he's up on that wall and he says, man, I'm not coming down from this wall. I got work to do. Folks, we got work to do. We got future leaders. We may have the future president that lives in our community. It's time to take action and build into them. And as we go from this place this morning, I just ask that you remember one thing, one very simple thing, that relationships are not built upon the aspect of control. Real relationships come from real respect.